football podcast where Matt, apparently everybody checks out our website because we're pretty popular now at MWR.com. So
football season's back. Of course we're popular.
Football season and expansion season apparently is back too.
That's true.
And I have a few ideas that we need to get to. We have a couple, at least one new guy writing some stuff, doing amazing. Our hoops guy doing stuff as well about all that stuff. But let's just say I'll ask you one quick question before we get to the games because this is our week three preview. That's okay. Matt over here. Do you really think CSU and Air Force are going to leave to go to the American?
Okay, so I don't – I mean, I guess that I could, but I think that the reasoning for doing so is probably a little different than just, you know competition on the field because, you know, when I think about Air Force, I perhaps inevitably think about what led Navy to join the American in the first place. Because if you recall, mm-hmm. Navy actually plays in the American West Division, or at least they did when the divisions existed. And the idea behind that was so that way they could continue to recruit nationally and be able to, I think, more effectively visit people across the country when they're, you know, recruiting, you know, whatever the naval version of a cadet is. So I would imagine that if Air Force was going to make a jump and, you know, they were going to restructure their competitions in such a way that, you know, you'd be able to maintain the integrity of the Commander-in-Chief's trophy a little more easily, and you know it would place them, I think, more equally in the same boat where they're kind of division quote unquote rivals, but
yeah,
you know, they're in a similar kind of situation, like they're in the same bucket more or less in that instance. Colorado State, I don't.
I know. Can I raise my hand and answer? I know.
Yes, you can.
They hate the Mountain West. Is that the only reason to leave?
I mean, I think if they think that being in the American is better for national exposure, then I think the only thing left to do is just prove it more consistently on the field because, you know, they have the facilities, they have the brand new stadium, they have the television market, you know, and by extension, they have the streaming market. So, I mean, I in that way, it makes sense, but, you know, there's still sort of the on-field product that needs to be resolved, or maybe past a certain point that begins to matter a little less if you're handling business elsewhere.
I think, like, it's funny, Bill C, too, put up the SP Plus, because some people put it, like, did a few configurations, but without UCF, Cincy, and Houston, and then them adding Air Force and Colorado State, it makes the conference worse in the Mountain West.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't get it because we're not going to spend too much time on this. I have a couple pieces I want to get to, but I've just kind of been doing other things. But read the other two we have out there that are really good about some possibilities. One's kind of a little out there with UAB included, but what really needs to be done, like Craig Thompson, they don't need to add anybody. They need to convince or show, like, tangibly why it's better to stay, which is money. Mm-hmm. Because anybody who tells me it's like the stupid Dennis – I don't know why Dennis Dodd ran with this garbage where somebody whispered in his ear the Big 12 is going to try to get the Pac-12 teams. Sure, the Big 12 would love to. Is that going to happen? Hell no, because there's no way the Pac-12 is going to be making less money or an Arizona school is going to the Big 12 is going to make more money than the Pac-12.
Mm-hmm.
As long as it's USC and Oregon, the money's there. So within the Mountain West, the money is going to be more in the Mountain West if it's as is. And the American will be as is less, will be less money without those three schools.
Mm-hmm.
And they're already only two million difference, I believe. Plus the American schools have to pay for all their infrastructure for ESPN Plus. Mountain West doesn't have to pay for all that stuff. Their games are CBS and Fox. So they don't have to worry about all that. So that's money too. Leaving as is, they're going to be more valuable than the American. So that's a reason to stay. If they want to expand, I've advocated just really quickly, like Memphis and SMU would be pretty good. Or as our buddy Aztec Breakdown mentioned, like we've talked about Gonzaga a few times, that'd be tough. But if you can get Memphis, basketball is really good. SMU's been decent in basketball. Reach out back out to Wichita State and then also Gonzaga. Like those are some options. Gonzaga doesn't need it because they can get a number one seed regardless, even without BYU and WCC. They're good enough they can get those home non-conference games. But that's kind of my dream scenario. If they want to expand, but SMU and Memphis, reasonable people are bringing if they want to add teams. And then the basketball of Memphis could help bring in those other two schools possibly and say, hey, we're better than maybe the Big East in basketball. You know what I mean? With Memphis, Wichita State, and Gonzaga. Heck yeah, San Diego State and New Mexico figure things out. Like there's potential to be as good at it, better than the Pac-12 possibly in basketball.
No, I mean, I could see that.
Do you, one last thing. Do you think what the, because Craig Thomas actually came out and was pretty vocal, because you know he only talks to San Diego Union Tribune. That's about it. I've tried numerous times at various radio stations to get him on a show, and even we know the guys in the Mountain West reasonably well over the years. He still won't. He's like, nope, sorry, Craig's not going to join. And I'm like, don't go talk to stupid whoever in San Diego. But do you think anything's going to happen with this? Like, is the Mountain West going to lose teams? Is Boise, San Diego State waiting for the Big 12 because they want to add more teams? I think if they add the right teams, I don't know if the Big 12 is enticeful enough. It could be, probably, but it would be enough to make that jump if that comes down the road in like 3 years.
Honestly, I don't see much happening. I think most of the action is likely to happen back east.
But do you think the Mountain West will lose teams?
I honestly don't think so.
I'm with you. I don't see the point. Like, there's no reason to leave to the American as it is right now. Like, if the Big 12 comes a couple of years, I am honestly surprised the Big 12 didn't get Boise and BYU recently. They kind of went around the globe, I guess, to get what they wanted. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think the Mountain West will probably stay as is, but those are two schools I think they could go and get. But that's kind of where I'm at. But nothing's going to happen for at least another year, I'd say.
Yeah.
Until the Big 12 knows what their money is going to be, and that's when next moves are going to happen. So let's get to the game this week. Let's start Friday night. Actually, kids, this is perfect timing. UNLV first in the state. I saw you retweet a couple hours ago. Good old Dorian Thompson Robinson. Is this an official quote? Because it came from our buddy Christopher Gabriel, who now does news and not sports in the Central Valley.
Yeah, it's from the Daily Bruin, which I think is the UCLA student newspaper, if I'm not mistaken.
We gave them the game. They didn't really win the game. Ultimately, it was guys. If guys would have just done their job and done it correctly, that game would have been put away a long time ago. That doesn't mean you gave them the game when you guys don't play well. Does he not contradict himself? If guys were done their job, yeah, if Fresno hit a long bomb in that first drive, they would have had another touchdown instead of punting away. It's like, hey, have you done your job? That just means Jason didn't play well. Do you have more talent? Maybe. I don't know. Star system would say yes, but you had 40 seconds to win the game. You couldn't do it. You couldn't stop a guy who had two broken hips, essentially, Jake Hader.
I don't know if it was that bad.
Oh, but it was pretty bad. Like
he's practicing this week. He's managing his workload. He'll be fine for Friday night, I think. I expressed a little bit of reservation. I figured we would know more out of Monday's press conference. But it seems like, you know, he's on the practice field. They're, you know, keeping him upright, which is a good sign.
Red jersey.
And, you know, I don't know that, even if he's a little banged up, against this UNLV front seven, like how much in danger is he really? Because the Rebels have sort of taken a step backwards as far as just being able to generate a pass rush. They only have, I believe, 4 sacks in the first 3 games. And maybe some of that has to do with the level of competition that they faced, especially over the last 2 games between Arizona State and Iowa State. It was pretty clear they were outclassed. But, you know, even when, you know, guys were threatening to make plays, it was really only like the handful of established talents that we already knew about. And I'm thinking primarily of Jacoby Winman and Adam Plant. You know, none of the other holdovers, none of the new arrivals have really made that same kind of impact just yet. So, you know, I look at this game, I look at what Fresno State's offensive line has been able to do over the first 4 games, and I really don't see much reason to suspect that the game, at least on UNLV's side of things, is going to look much different from what they've been facing recently.
You're not wrong. We should mention 7 p.m. Pacific, CBS Sports Network, Friday night, 30.5 points for Fresno State. But should Jake Hayner even play in this game if he is? I'm not saying he put it on, but he looks like he's pretty beat up.
Yes.
Like, you think he should play?
I think he should.
If they have a comfortable lead, which seems to be the case, should he play the whole game? Like, say they're up 28-3 in the third quarter. Should he continue to play?
I would say they'll probably play the same way that they played the UConn game or the Cal Poly game, where he mostly played 3 quarters and that was it.
Okay. I just wonder if him be healthy, because they could win this game without him, clearly.
I mean, I think you don't want to take anything for granted, especially coming off of a big win. You know, yeah, UNLV hasn't looked good, but you know, your opening conference play, you know, one wrong step and all of a sudden you're not where you expected to be. So they're going to come out guns blazing, and it's just going to be a matter of, you know, how well UNLV can withstand it. But, you know, quite frankly, if you look at their defensive stats, it hasn't been pretty, and you can't just explain all of it away by, you know, quality and competition. You know, especially on defense, you know, you're looking at a unit that they've allowed, you know, outside of garbage time, they basically allowed 7 yards per play. That's, you know, 110th nationally. In terms of points per drive, they're even worse than that. You know, in defensive points per drive is 4.24. That's 126. Like, the only teams that are worse are, I think, Akron and UConn, and that's it. And so, you know, that in itself, like, even a less than 100% Hayner, like a Hayner at 80%, along with all the weapons around him, should be more than enough to handle whatever UNLV is going to be able to throw at them.
Oh, that makes sense. But UNLV can't throw enough. I don't care what they're doing. Like, if UNLV plays their best game, which could be Woodman playing well, if it looks like Brumfield's going to be starting the quarterback, he's been practicing all week, he'll be back. Like, even if Charles Williams goes off for 189 yards, I don't see UNLV coming close to this game. They are not UConn bad, but they're in that neighborhood. They're around the corner.
They're
waving when they get the mail in the morning, at night, in newspaper in the morning.
Let's be a little charitable to UNLV, because, like, did you see the thing that SB Plus put out there? I think it was after last Saturday's games.
I remember seeing it. They'll update them as well since then.
That UConn might literally be, through four games, the worst college football team of all time.
I did. I said neighborhood. Like, I didn't say right next to
you. You know, like, UNLV has looked rough on the whole, but, you know, at least they moved the ball a little bit against Arizona State, and at least they hung against, you know, an FCS team, a pretty good FCS team. You know, so I'm trying to, not to say, like, they have zero chance of winning this game, but I think if they're going to do it, you know, even if Brumfield is the starter, you know, what you saw last week was sort of like it struck me as sort of like a non-commitment to whatever plan B that Arroyo was cooking up, you know. And I put this out there in the winners and losers column I wrote on Sunday. I said, you know, if you knew that Martel was going to see the game, and the way that Joe Arrigo of Franchise Sports Media had framed it was early and often, we didn't see Martel until the third quarter. Yeah. And while, you know, I think his status is still up in the air, there was some video footage from from practice on Tuesday when we were recording this of Tate Martel in a walking boot. So I don't know if they're necessarily going to be able to pull that out again. But with that in mind, like, if you're this much of an underdog, you can't play it straight. What I want to see from UNLV is I just want to see a little more variety in their game plan. I want to see them run more fly sweeps, maybe run a double pass or something like that. You know, I want them to kind of scour every inch of the playbook to find every advantage that they can get, because I think as composed at present, you know, running Charles Williams into the line of scrimmage 15 to 20 times a game is admirable, but it's just not cutting it.
Well, you're right. They have decent receivers that can make plays, like Tyler Collins and stuff. They have guys out there. And Brumfield, if he gets a full game in there, maybe he can do something. Because the Fresno defense has made plays, but they're not, like, this amazing defense. Like, there's reason to have questions coming into the season. They've made plays, but, like, success for me and UNLV in this game is, like, losing by 3 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
That might be considered a success. And keep Fresno under 50.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that, you know, I think UNLV's best chance is to try to do, you know, something of what they did against Arizona State for as long as it was working, you know, working short passes, working the intermediate game, getting Brumfield some easy throws, some easy completions so that the Bulldogs at least have to respect the passing game a little bit, because I think as soon as they get to just key on Charles Williams and tee off on Brumfield when they get into, you know, more obvious passing situations, you know, the sooner that happens, it's the longer that nights can end up being for the Rebels. But I think if there's one potential hindrance, you know, we saw it with DTR in like the third quarter, especially, you know, it's not an infallible pass defense. And so that's the thing that I would keep in mind if I was a UNLV fan, is just, you know, how well can, or how much progress can Brumfield make as a thrower, as a passer on the field? Because he's been shown that he can create big plays. Like, that's not an issue. But, you know, it's just finding more efficiency, finding more consistency, the ability to just move the chains a little more often.
Yeah, I don't know if they will. That's the thing. That's ideally, but this is still a situation.
I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying I think that's the most likely path to victory for them.
There is no. I know you're being nice, but there's no path to victory for UNLV.
Okay, so what's your prediction then?
It's going to be 40-10. I'm going to go 40-10, and that means UNLV covers by half a point.
So, so there are no SP Plus projections. I think they typically come out on Wednesday. So if you don't follow Bill Connolly at ESPN_BillC on Twitter, you know, he usually tweets it out sometime during midday, I think. FEI favors Fresno State by 20.7, though.
Do I know what the ESPN FPI football predictor or matchup predictor says?
Is it like 98% or something like that?
You're close, 97%.
Huh.
It's a blowout in half making. Like, Fresno's a top 25 team, probably even better since the Oregon game. They should be ranked a bit higher, but I'm serious. Like, 40-10 might be conservative, but 30.5 points is a ton to take. But I think it'll be just close to that. But I think 40-10 is realistic.
Yeah, I've got the Bulldogs winning 49-7.
49-7. All right, so what's next for you? Or next to us, Saturday. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, lots of games on Saturday. I'm not going to count them all because that's boring.
We got eight games on Saturday, excuse me.
Okay, all right, 8 games. So here we go. Boise State at Utah State. Regular CBS, Matt, that's a big deal. In Logan, Maverick Stadium. If I had to give you $100 before the season started, would you think Utah State would be undefeated? Would you take Boise State in a heartbeat?
Well, I mean, you know what? Honestly, I didn't think either team would be undefeated.
Okay. But we got Utah State, 3-0. Home dog, 9 points. Is that too generous?
That's interesting.
That's a lot, I think. Over-under is 70 points. 70. And I think that leans more toward Utah State scoring points. Because what we know about Boise State is, yeah, they put up 31 versus UCF. That's solid. 54 versus UTEP is more like, well, it's UTEP. And then Oklahoma State, they scored 0 points in the second half and 20 overall. To me, if you're telling me it's 70 points, Utah State should be favored.
Right? I mean, I don't know, man. The only reason I say that is because, you know, we've seen 3 games now out of the Aggies in particular, and they've given a lot of ground, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And so I think the biggest question in this game is, like, you know, is the outcome going to look more like a mix of what we saw last week between the Aggies and Air Force? And, you know, what Boise State was able to do against UTEP, or are the Aggies going to be able to find defensive answers? So just in terms of, like, you know, just straight up yards per play, for example, this is including, you know, all 3 games. The Aggies are dead last in terms of yards per play in the Mountain West, 6.88. That is not good. And the reason why, you know, I would say a substantial reason why they've been able to, you know, stay on top of things is because, you know, they're plus 1 in terms of overall turnover margin. They've created 5 turnovers, and it seems like every single one has been, like, extremely timely. You know, just thinking back to last week's game against the Falcons, for instance, you know, they had, like, the interception, you know, inside the 5-yard line that stopped a Falcons touchdown drive. The fact that they trailed Washington State for, what, 55 minutes before they came back and rallied in that game in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. The fact that they absorbed a pretty substantial body blow from North Dakota before the offense kind of clicked and put it together or ran away with it.
Yeah, there's issues.
Which is not to say that, you know, Utah State can't win this game, but they've got to prove that they can make more stops on defense. And if they can't, then Boise State's all of a sudden going to start looking a lot better, you know, than they did last week, late, especially late.
What makes you think Boise State's going to be better? Their offensive line's garbage. They couldn't run the ball. They couldn't stop the run. Defensive line can't do anything. They give up 200-something yards in the first half. Hank Bachmar gets hit all the time. He's running for his life. Why? Just because Utah State gives the ball those yards, what makes you think Boise State's just going to go out there and get 5-plus yards a carry? What proof do you have when they play?
How many sacks do you think Utah State has in the first three games?
If you ask me that, probably not many. I don't know, what,
four.
Three?
They have four sacks in three games. That is also dead last in the conference.
Okay. I'm not saying it's not issues, but I'm saying from Boise's perspective, what makes you think they can move the ball well against anybody? Like,
we just saw them do it 2 weeks ago against UTEP. And you can't just ignore that because
I'm ignoring UTEP. No.
UTEP is a better team than the last couple of years. And we're going to talk more about them in a little bit, actually.
Yeah, but
what I'm saying is, like, we've seen Boise do this, be able to move the ball, even if, you know, not necessarily as balanced as they want to be. We've seen them do it. And so the big question is, are they going to be able to do it against Utah State? Because through three games, Utah State has shown that they can be moved. That's what I'm saying.
Sure, but also Utah State's averaging 6.8 yards per carry offensive as well. And Boise State's near the bottom of the Mountain West at 5.3 yards on their offensive end. So Boise's not moving the ball very well for them. And so, yeah, Utah State's defense isn't great. They're not sacking the quarterback. They're allowing a lot of yards. But also, you know, they played Air Force. Look what Air Force likes to do. Like, they played a run-heavy team in Air Force and a pass-heavy team in Washington State. So maybe those numbers are skewed a little bit because who they've played, because those two teams get the yards regardless. But I'm not saying it's a great defense, but there's a few things to consider when you're looking at who they played and to what these teams can do. But then, like, the offense, like, again, Boise made adjustments. The second half, Oklahoma State was pretty good, was really good because they shut down Jalen Warren. But again, he still had over 200 yards on his own. Like, Utah State's figured out a little bit what they're doing on the ground. So, and also with Utah State, we don't really know the quarterback situation. But apparently it doesn't seem to matter if it's Andrew Peasley or Logan Bonner. They still seem to be perfectly fine, which could be another issue with Boise State preparing for two quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot going right for Utah State. Like, defense isn't great. But, Calvin Tyler Jr. has four touchdowns. He's getting 6 yards a carry. He's figuring things out. Like, Devin Tompkins is probably – what, him and Jalen Cropper, the best, and Romeo Dubs, the best receivers in the conference? Like, the offense is going to move the ball. That's why I think the over-under is like 70 points, because it's going to be a freaking shootout.
I mean, I think, you know, what you mentioned about Calvin Tyler Jr. and that Utah State running game in particular, I think that's the rub for Boise. Because,
yeah, that's it.
Because we saw, you know, last week that, you know, Jalen Warren was able to run all over them. And to their credit, you know, they adjusted after halftime. It's worth remembering that most of Warren's production came in the first 30 minutes. But I think, mm-hmm. you know, one thing that Boise State's going to have to prove is just, you know, the ability to you know, stiffen up a little bit sooner. You know, in terms of that per carry average between the first half and the second half, for instance, and this is true of all the games that they played so far. In the first half of games, they're allowing 5.75 yards per carry. After halftime, that drops to 3 yards per carry. So I think that, you know, that, you know, the ability is there. We just haven't seen them put all the pieces together yet, at least not over the course of 60 minutes. It's like, you know, they look great for like 20 minutes, and then they make one or two mental errors, and then, you know, they lose the edge, they lose the lead, and then they shoot themselves in the foot unnecessarily in the third or fourth quarter. And that's basically been the story of their season so far. But again, we saw an entirely different story against UTEP. And so, like I said, if the offense can get right, then I think the only other question is, you know, are they going to be able to stop Utah State's running game? Because I think Boise State's back end is probably a little bit better at this point than the front end. You know, they've got rangy guys back there who can make plays. And so I think, you know, that, you know, Boise State's defensive line versus Utah State's offensive line is probably where this game turns one way or the other.
So who has the edge, do you think?
See, that's the thing. Because you know, Boise State, they haven't had like that one guy that's been able to step up. Like, I believe they actually just lost Divine Obituary to injury, at least for the foreseeable future. So, you know, that's one more guy up front that they're going to be without. You know, Isaiah Bagnaw had like one good game against UCF and has been relatively quiet ever since. You know, Scott Matlock's had a couple of good games. Shane Irwin's had a couple of good games. I think they just need to pull together as a unit, which isn't to say that it can't be done. I think that particular matchup is too close to call one way or the other.
So when we look at advantages on this team, who has a couple areas, like who's the better quarterback situation, Boise or Utah State?
I mean, I guess just based on offensive production, you'd almost have to say Utah State.
Okay.
Because they have the that's advantage nice. As far as yards per play over Boise State to this point in the season, which isn't to say that Boise State's been bad, but they've been average on a per play basis. Same thing with points per drive. You know, Utah State's they rank 17th in terms of offensive points per drive and 104th on defense. Boise, by contrast, is 51st on both sides of the ball. So they've been okay, but not great. They also haven't been any better or worse by that metric than they were last year either. It's just, it's sort of like a mystery wrapped in an enigma almost, where like the talent hasn't gone anywhere. It's just, eliminating the mental mistakes that has more or less been the difference between their two losses this year.
Running game, Utah State, right?
For right now, yeah.
It has to be. Receiving, pretty close. Because Khalil Shakir is doing, he's nearly doing what, he's in the neighborhood of Devin Tompkins, not quite there, but he's close enough. But defense, Boise State, most part, but there's still good players in Utah State. So, I think Utah State's going to do it.
So what's the spread on this game?
Boise is a 9-point road favorite. Like, give me a break. What? There should be no reason they're a 9-point favorite, right?
So FBI favors Boise State by 8.4.
I don't get it. Why? What are they seeing? Like, Boise had two close losses. And I admit, I go back to the UCF game. I honestly don't know how they got to pick six, but they did not look as good as UCF on the field at all. I know they moved the ball reasonably well and stopped them sort of a little bit, it's UCF. But athletically and everything, I felt UCF was by far the more superior team. And I'm surprised it's that close after watching a little bit. But I don't know, man. Like, FBI puts Boise 2-1 to win, 66%. But I think Utah State can do it. I'm going Aggies to win the game.
So what's your final score prediction?
Oh, man. It's going to be close. It's not going to be 9-point. Nobody's going to win by more than a touchdown. I'll say it's going to be 35. No, let's see. That's all touchdowns. Let's go 31-27, Utah State.
I'm going to say count out Boise State at your own peril.
I am. I'm doing it today. Fine. Come after me. Hey, I made the bold prediction. I'll be 1-5.
So, I'm going to take the Broncos. I don't think they're going to cover, but I think they're going to win.
No way.
I do. Yeah, I'm going to say 31-23.
And did we mention this is 10 a.m. local kickoff?
Yeah, so roll out of bed, get your mimosas going, get your morning buzz going on, and then just kind of cruise for the rest of the day. That's how I do it anyway.
Would you pay $40 to watch this game? That's the get-in price right now.
I probably would, yeah.
I totally. This is going to be a good game. All right, next game.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends, so for me, it's you know.
Trying to get him out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
San Jose State's back from their bye. They are going up against Western Michigan at the MAC. It is on another ESPN Plus game, so make sure. Oh, my mic fell. Apologies, people, for that noise. They play Western Michigan Broncos who are 2-1. It is a 11 a.m. local, or excuse me, 11 a.m. kick Pacific time. ESPN Plus out in Kalamazoo. Also, this is a unique Western Michigan favored by 3 points, Matt. That's a little interesting too, isn't it?
Only if you haven't been paying attention to the Broncos, the Max Broncos.
You always tell me. You tell me that. I know they're one in
last we saw.
They Pitt, beat Pitt 44-41
Pitt last week. Pitt's an okay Power 5 team. They're a solid Power 5 team. But did you see the commentary that they put out there after the game?
I did not. What are they saying?
I heard them mention it on the Split Zone Duo match, a podcast. I think they were talking with Tim Lester, the Western Michigan head coach, and he said they basically watched film from the Syracuse game from like 8 years ago, and they knew exactly what Pitt was going to do, which was all to say that Pitt is probably going to fire Pat Narduzzi soon, that's another story. But Western Michigan is a team that is basically all gas and no brakes. You know, they have a very, very powerful offense, which, you know, even though they got blown out by Michigan, like they didn't make a lot of obvious mistakes. Like they had, you know, most of the game where they moved the ball. They just weren't always able to kind of finish their opportunities. But, you know, they have one of the better quarterbacks anywhere in the group of five in Caleb Ellaby, who, you know, dating back to last year has an interception rate under 1%.
That's good.
In 9 games. So like he's efficient. He's explosive. He gets the ball to his playmakers, and they also have a pretty strong running back duo in Ladarius Washington, I believe it is. The other guy's name escapes me. Do you have it in front of you?
I was going to mention that you see Tim Lester is not going to be on the sidelines for this game.
I did. Yeah. He's vaccinated, but he caught COVID-19, so he's not going to be coaching.
Yeah. He's not coaching. So do you think that's going to play a big factor if him not being there?
Maybe.
I think it will. Look it up in the Spartans where they missed half their coaching staff in the bowl game.
That's true. But there's a difference between missing your entire half your staff and
running back. I know. Yeah, so running backs are Ladarius Jefferson and Sean Tyler.
Jefferson. Sorry, I didn't have the tab in front of me and I was trying to open it.
Who has five it touchdowns?
It also doesn't help that they haven't released their depth chart yet, which is mildly annoying.
Yeah, Corey Crooms catches the ball in the they have three decent receivers over 10 catches each. So you're right, the offense is pretty explosive. 12 touchdowns on the year. No interceptions from Albie. As you mentioned, he has that low percentage rate, interception rate. So honestly, this will be a good test for Spartans defense because you mentioned, I don't remember if it was on one of our previous shows or one of your winners and losers, like Cadle hasn't done a ton this year. He's just been out there doing stuff, not really being player of the year type of player. Mm-hmm. But this will be a team like they expect a lot of points, but you're going to need him, you need Fajoka, all these guys to come up and figure out how to stop something that Western Michigan does well. Because I don't think Western Michigan will be able to do both things extremely well. But so the Spartans got to kind of, not that they need to pick, but they need to figure out. And I think if they play their best, they'll be in there. But they can't allow Western Michigan to run and pass well. That's bad. Fine. They can't do both. Well, one area needs to be slowed or shut down to assist the Spartans to get the victory.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that like Western Michigan across the board doesn't have the same kind of talent that USC has, for instance. But I think that USC game is instructive because we know that the Spartans were able to put the clamps on the Trojans for the better part of 3 quarters. And it wasn't until they blinked and they made a couple mistakes late that the game really got away from them. I think the big difference between them is that Western Michigan, you know, they have 3 fumbles this year, but again, Ellaby hasn't thrown in an interception. So I think the difference between him and someone like Kedon Slovis is that he's far less mistake prone through the air. And so, you know, you look at that on one hand, and you look at on the other hand, you know, the Spartans haven't lost like their propensity for getting their hands on the football. you know, they're, I believe, tied for first in the conference with Hawaii in terms of like passes defended. 20 pass breakups, zero interceptions in three games.
Which is more
curious than anything. You know, because, you know, they say that there's a correlation between, you know, being able to, you know, defend passes and interceptions, which is probably an obvious kind of connection. But
yes,
but San Jose State's going to have to find a way to, like, you know, create those breaks, whether they're fluky, like tip drill interceptions or anything like that. I think, you know, it bodes well that they were able to frustrate Slovis, that they, you know, they were able to frustrate Siobhan Cordero last week for the most part. You know, even if the flashy numbers haven't necessarily popped out yet, I think that, you know, they, as a team, they're just as good as they were in 2020. For me, the bigger question is, what is the offense going to do? Because if Western Michigan is anything, and is also a team that really struggles, you know, to stop other teams from moving the ball. You know, we talked about, you know, UNLV being sort of a pushover. We talked about Utah State being a pushover. On defense, the Broncos are exactly the same way. You know, in terms of like garbage time, you know, yards per play allowed, 8.64 in the games that they played against Pitt and Michigan State. That's 124th nationally. And that's more of a continuation of what they were, you know, the kind of game that they played for the most part in 2022. There were a lot of shootouts, a lot of games that ended in the 40s. So while the offense hasn't lost any of its potency, I don't know if we could say the same for San Jose State, because, you know, Nick Starkel's been a little more mistake prone than he was last year. You know, the running game appears to have gone back to being non-existent if Tyler Nevins isn't playing. But, you know, Western Michigan doesn't necessarily have like a ton of playmakers that could offer a lot of resistance if San Jose State is able to put things together. You know, they've got, you know, one defensive lineman, Ali Fayad, who's sort of an all caliber guy, you know, 3.5 tackles for loss. They have another defensive lineman, Ralph Hawley, who has a pair of TFLs. But they haven't been able to really seal the deal as often as you might expect. So if San Jose State can put it together, you know, again, they can make this into a shootout, but I don't necessarily know that they want to turn it into a shootout. I think they would rather get a lead and be able to just, you know, have their stars take over on defense.
Well, I could see that, because both, like, if you look at the better unit so far, like offenses, they'll move the ball, but I think it's safe to say Spartans defense, even if it hasn't been playing amazing. Like, you're right, what you mentioned earlier, USC game, but three quarters they played well. That's the one area that's going to make the difference in this game if San Jose State's defense steps up and plays close to what we expected. Mm-hmm. Because, again, remember, they throw no picks. You mentioned there's been no interceptions on San Jose State. Like, the Broncos have a couple of good running backs. They have three good receivers. It's going to be a test. So I think it's going to be all the points, but I think that's going to make the difference is, at least if you say that San Jose State's going to win, it's because their defense steps up to make some plays.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think? What's going to happen?
So FEI favors Western Michigan by 8 points, interestingly.
Oh, boy. That's a lot.
I just don't know if I've seen enough from the Spartans to think that they can keep up.
You don't – oh, no victory. Okay.
No, I'm going to take Western Michigan to win 38-34.
Ooh, the Broncos are going to win. It's on the road. That's tricky. I think with the off week, that's why I'm going to take San Jose State to win. But it's going to be because over under 63 points because neither defense is amazing. So I think that's going to be – they'll blow past that. I think I'm going to go – well, not blow past. I mean, I'm going to go 38-33 for San Jose State.
All right. So you're basically flipping the
score. I think – yeah, that's what we're going to do. I kind of think because off week to get things going. But the quarterback's Nick Starkle as well. So it's like, there you go. And I guess we need to mention Isaiah Hamilton will catch a touchdown pass return in this game as well.
All right. That's an oddly specific and bold prediction. I'm going to hold you to that.
Why not? He's their best receiver. Why won't he suggest?
Okay. I'm glad you stuck it in there then.
Oh, wait. Really? Do you know Tyler Nevin's status?
I haven't seen anything about it.
He didn't play last time, 2 weeks ago. So we'll keep an eye out for that for our preview. So look and see, because if he plays, that's another reason to take the Spartans. So, all right. Next game, which will be surprisingly, you would think this game would be the biggest line of the weekend, but it's like number 3 or something, looking at what we have for the whole weekend. Colorado State and their newly formed amazing defense from last week goes in there to take on number 5 Iowa, FS1, 130 Mountain, 230 Central. I'm sorry, I'm laughing too much at the over-under. The over-under is 44.5. The line is 23 points.
That does not surprise me in the least.
It's just, what they going to be, 33-10? 34-10 is what they're saying?
Yeah, something like that.
I guess so, but the confidence, do you have any more confidence the Rams can do something to make this game interesting after their defense actually showed up and played well last week?
Say that question again?
The defense played better for the Rams, right?
Yes.
Last week?
Yes, they did.
Does that give you any confidence they can keep this game interesting for a little bit?
I'm going to say yes.
How interesting?
So that depends entirely on like how extremely Iowa is.
Yeah.
So like, you know, they're ranked number five in the country, right? Do you have any idea like what their offensive production has looked like to this point?
Let's see. They have Kirk Ferentz as their head coach, who's been there for a million years.
Uh-huh.
They like to run the book a lot. I couldn't name you a quarterback ever who's been reasonably good at that program within the past 15 years. So I'm going to say it's just been mediocre at best.
So, no. So in terms of like SP Plus, for example, this is just to tell you, like, this is a very Iowa team through three games. Defensive SP Plus, they're second.
Makes sense.
In the country. Special teams, they're ninth. Offensively, they are 70.
Oh, only 70? Sorry, only 70. I was looking at
you. Okay, hold on. I'm not done yet, though.
Oh, there's more. Wait, there's more.
So they're tied for last in the Big Ten as far as yards per play on offense.
That's what's good enough. They're 19th in the country in yards per play.
4.49. Yeah, so even if you adjust that for garbage time, it's still not that much better. It's only 4.61, according to Brian Freeman over at BCF Toys. Offensive points per drive, also not terribly impressive. Like, they're only averaging 2 points per drive on offense, which is 70th. So that's below average. So the only reason I say yes is because if Colorado State is able to hold on to its gains from last week, which, you know, we talked about in the recap, that's the kind of defense I expected to see, then yeah, they could absolutely make Iowa's life miserable on that side of the ball. But if the offense can't find anything, that defense, man, whew, that is a good defense.
Because, yeah, that's the thing too. Like, it's at least like if Dante Wright is not able to play, if his foot thing is bothering him still. So this game could be potentially, remember when they played Alabama a couple years ago,
mm-hmm.
maybe 5 years ago, where they had like the offense did nothing, but they had like a defensive touchdown. And they scored like a short drive. It was a reasonably close game. Like, it was within 17 points or something.
Uh-huh.
It was kind of a fluky, but they had like a defensive score, short field to kind of assist them. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but like if the defense plays well, it's going to need something like that where defensive touchdown, Ryan Stonehouse kicks them in the corner and they can't move the ball because you're stuck inside the 10-yard line. Like, they're going to need to flip the field. The defense is going to have to slow down Iowa offense. It clearly isn't great, they're not good. Let's just put it that way. They're just a Big Ten team, and they just try to mow you over with their giant 300-pound offensive lineman to run the ball. But if they could slow them down and find anything in offense, and here's what it's going to be, too. It can't be, like you mentioned in the recap, and we know every week, Todd Senteo focuses on, like, two receivers, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Dante Wright and their tight end. Like, they don't throw the ball around. He's going to have to find multiple people open. He's going to have to throw to different people because he's focused on those two guys. I was going to figure out, I'm like, all right, we won't let him catch the ball, and he's going to just run for his life and do whatever
either,
back there.
They're going to have or David Bailey's going to get like 30 carries in this game.
Yeah, they'll need that too. But I mean, if the passing game is going to be helpful, they're going to need to find more than two receivers. They've been focusing on the entire season.
Senteo needs to get back to the kind of quarterback he was like in the first half of the South Dakota State game. In the first half of the Vanderbilt game, because that was a guy who, whatever he lacked in flash, he didn't make mistakes. You know, like, you know, even if he was maybe relying on one or two guys, it's because those one or two guys were almost always open.
Yeah.
Like, if he can get back to that and play, you know, functional, mistake-free football, then that's another reason that they could possibly hang around. But I think, you know, the problem for them is that Iowa State's got, like, a very, very strong front seven. You know, Zach Van Valkenburg is obviously kind of the big name. But yeah, they've got a kind of an up-and-coming freshman in Lucas Van Ness, who already has three sacks. He's not even the only guy with three sacks on that defense. Joe Evans, the defensive end, also has that. You know, this is a team that knows how to get after the quarterback, knows how to shut down a running game. So I just, you know, I see the path. I think with as good as Iowa State is on defense in particular, I just don't know that Colorado State's going to have much breathing room that the Hawkeyes are going to give them.
There's not. And one thing, too, I was looking at here, like, we say their offense is pretty poor, Iowa. They still have Tyler Goodson, who averages 5 yards a carry.
Yeah.
So they could use him while, like, Spencer Petras isn't doing amazing things, only 2 touchdowns, been sacked 6 times. But they can just run the ball if they need to. And that's kind of what I think they'll probably lean on to do, assuming the Rams' defense – maybe it doesn't hold water like last week, but it's going to be a long day. But here's what I'm going to say. If the Rams defense plays like last week and Bailey can run reasonably well, like, well, by meaning what, 18 carries for 70 yards might be reasonably well against this team. Like, they might be able to keep it within 2 touchdowns, but that still might be asking a lot. But that's if the Rams defense plays as good as last week. And if they do, it might be, so, like we mentioned before, somewhat interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But Iowa's going to win regardless, so there's that. Let's put that away right now. CSU is not winning this game.
So FBI favors the Hawkeyes pretty big time, actually. Bigger than I thought. 22.6. So what do you got?
I'm going to go 27-10.
Okay, yeah, I can see something like that.
That's if the Rams play great. There's two ways. If they play like they did before, it could be like 50-3. Because remember, this team lost to South Dakota State and Vanderbilt. Like, and they were leading Vanderbilt, but it's a mixed match of teams. If the Rams play the best, it'll be within 17 points. If they don't, it'll be like seriously 40-10 or something like that. But I'm gonna go 27-10. I think they're figuring a few things out defensively, and it'll be a victory for Iowa. It's like, oh, interesting. They won by 17 points, but they're still in control of the whole game. That's what I think it's going to be.
I think Iowa's going to roll.
Ooh.
42-10.
42-10. Fine. All right. It's a big game there. All right. Wyoming at UConn. CBS Sports Network. 3:30 Eastern out there in Source, Connecticut. 1:30 Wyoming. We've seen UConn this year. However, they have a new head coach because Randy Edsall just up and I'm out of here, folks. I'm done.
He peaced out, yeah.
Yeah, 29.5-point favorite for Wyoming. Only a 55 over-under.
You know, I thought about this, and it made me wonder, like, how often do we see a road favorite with that big of a spread?
That's not an FCS team?
That's not an FCS team.
Well, what was Arizona State UNLV, or what was Iowa State UNLV was 30 points last week for the Cyclones.
That's true. I guess it happens a little more often than I thought.
but that also, under the caveat, that was a ranked team playing somebody. This unranked Wyoming team. So I think this is a bit more different than that. There's, you see a handful of times, but usually it's like that. I remember like in the, when Nebraska was actually good at football, they were going to the road for anybody. They're 40-point favorites, and they'd beat team 60-2 or something. Like, they'd maybe get a rain field goal or safety because the defense pins them back and the punter loses the ball over the head. But Wyoming is going to be 4-0. UConn, like you mentioned before, an SP Plus might literally be the worst football team ever. Ever.
Yeah, it's pretty dire.
Yeah, Lou Spanos is a lot going on. So it looks like they are within the quarterback situation, because last week it was Steven Krzyzewski, is that correct?
Krzyzewski,
sorry. That's an interesting name to say there. He listed as a starter, but Spanos, during weekly press conference last week, basically said the best quarterback gives him the best chance to win is going to play, which, duh, right? And so they had freshman Tyler Pomachon? Oh, I got it right. Good. The PH, you never know. So he took the first down. So we'll see who's going to play quarterback, but they got blown up by Army. They were down, 35 points early on. Right now it's it is the freshman who should be starting this week, but I don't know. Like he's going crazy. Like Nate Carter's now the starting running back. They have all these different players who are backups getting starters. So I don't know if he's just playing for next year. Who knows if Luke Spanos is going to be even back next year. I think he's trying to play to mix things up to help his Huskies team do the best he can by, all right, you're the backup this week, you're starting. We're going to see what you got. You're going to get time to play. You're going to earn this job and show that you're an FBS college football player worthy of scholarship and doing well. So, right, like almost every single position, like the guard position, wide receiver is switched up. Defensively, they've changed with the safety, taking over who's starting, who's not starting. It's been a lot of changes on this team, and so I think they're just trying to do whatever they can. And they're going to see who can play, because you're a practice guy, okay, or you're not a practice guy. There's guys who don't practice, and they come out and play, and they're amazing players in the field. So maybe all these guys really, you know how it is. Like, if the coach put me in this one time, guys, we would have won the game. Well, here's your chance, guys. Coach is going to put you in. And maybe this is the little spark they need to maybe make something interesting in this game, but it's still not going to be enough. Well, I mean, with Xavier Valade, who hasn't really been amazing this year, expect him to probably have 120-something yards in this game. Sean Chambers to throw like 12 different receivers. This is going to be another blowout because, this defense is really good. Maybe we'll see another pick six. I don't know. Defensive score. But I don't see what UConn can provide to either stop or score against this Wyoming team.
Do you realize that UConn still doesn't have a receiver that's cracked 100 yards on the season?
Nope, I did not see that. That's embarrassing. And they played four games.
That's pretty sobering, to be honest.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, you know, because I throw a lot of the, you know, the advanced metrics out there and the traditional metrics. And, like, I could do that for the Huskies, but you kind of already get a sense of where they rank in all these things. Like, if it's not at the bottom, it's near the bottom. By basically every metric on both sides of the ball. So, you know, with that amount of turnover, you know, I think I feel the most empathy for like the guys who have hung around and continue to contribute, you know, and I think of like the guys we talked about up front, like, you know, Travis Jones, he's a big, he takes up a lot of space on the interior. He's got, you know, three TFLs in four games, which isn't bad, you know, between him and Kevin Jones, six TFLs between them. You know, Omar Ford has stuck around and he's been sort of a tackling machine. It's just one of those things where it's like, you know, at a certain point, yeah, you've got like two or three pieces, but you're also just getting murdered week after week. So, I mean, I think if I'm Wyoming, I just want to see more of what I saw last week. I think that's sort of the ultimate goal. And even if it doesn't mean scoring 40 points, it just means seeing that same kind of efficiency that we've seen more often than not. You know, just, you know, being able to kind of carry that momentum into conference play. I think will be a huge boost, you know, because I think, you know, Stephen Grodpy on the Split Zone Duo podcast said it best, you know, this is sort of like the fully formed North Dakota State-esque team that, you know, we were waiting to see. This might be the juncture where like now it's right in front of us and this UConn game is maybe more of a tune-up than anything else for making good on what they have built over the last couple of years, because they're good, they're deep, and they're healthy. And I think so, you know, just, you know, staying healthy and playing good is sort of like, you know, maybe that's not a particularly insightful key to the game, but I think that's what you want. No serious injuries, you know, no haphazard, you know, obvious mistakes, you know, take care of business against a team that has no business being competitive in this game.
So UConn's been giving up averaging over 40 points allowed per game.
Yeah.
Is Wyoming going to score more than 40 points? Yes. That's a benchmark. Okay. What's your score prediction then going to be?
So, as you might expect, FEI does favor the Cowboys by quite a bit. They favor them over UConn by 28. Okay, so what did you say the line for this game was?
29.5.
Oh, I would take that easily.
It's like you told me, hey, just take Fresno State week one. I'm like, you sure? 28's a lot of points.
I'm gonna say Wyoming 56-10.
I'm not sure. I'm more surprised at 10 or 56. Do you think they're gonna win by 56 points? Would be the most points they've allowed all year.
I don't even think they're gonna have to do anything flashy to get it either.
49-3 for me.
All right, then.
I will allow a token field goal, 49-3. All right, next game. Townsend, oh boy, at San Diego State in Carson, California. 3-0 Aztecs. I guess what I want to know about this game, because Coach Brady Hoke kind of vaguely gave an update on Jordan Brookshire. Like, he's like, oh, if we play, it's a stupid coaching. If we play tomorrow, he's not going to play.
Mm-hmm.
It's like with the Fresno game in UNLV, it's like, should Lucas Johnson just get to start if he's not fully healthy? Or if he is healthy, give him just a little bit here or there just to get out there and back in the field to see how he's doing, because they're going to beat Townsend, beat him easily. Greg Bell's going to have a big game. Defense is going to shut them down. If he's good enough to play, let him play, but if it gets out of hand, which I think it would be, just let Lucas Johnson get some more carries and playing time out there, because he played pretty well versus Utah. Like, he rushed a reasonable amount. His throwing was just fine. But give him another chance to maybe play just in case.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of think that's the way they should handle this game.
I mean, I think you're probably right, because, you know, not that Towson is a pushover, but, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, FCS teams threatening FBS teams in the first few weeks, and Towson isn't really that kind of team at present. You know, they were, you know, they got blown out at home by North Dakota State, which, you know, maybe you expect. But, you know, they had a nice win against New Hampshire. They got beat by New Hampshire. I was looking at the score backwards. You know, they beat Morgan State with a shutout in the opener. You know, it's an okay FCS team, but it's not a team that really threatens you in pretty much any way. You know, Chris Ferguson's a decent quarterback, but like, his passer rating is only 113.99. So that's For you folks out there, that's just not very good. You know, their leading receiver has 146 yards in three games. So, you know, you look at a lot of their, you know, numbers, you know, rate metrics or whatever, you know, they're, you know, 77th in FCS in terms of total offense. They're, you know, in terms of total defense, they're 43rd, you know, so they got some playmakers, but, you know, they've been able, you can push them around on third downs. You know, they're only 70th on offense on third downs and maybe in the top 50, but they're giving up, I believe, you know, 34-35% of third downs on defense. But again, if San Diego just goes out and does exactly what it did last week, where, you know, throw only when absolutely necessary and otherwise just hand off to your legion of running backs, this is a game that they should win pretty easily.
Yeah, there's no reason this should be. Yeah, this is easy victory, right? There's no, it's going to be a score. Oh, I'm sorry. I got like a bug in my room flying around. That's weird. Sorry. It's like this giant came through my window. I'm like, holy crap. Sorry. I'm going to go 35-10 San Diego State. 35-10.
I'm going to go even bigger than that. I'm going to say 42-3.
Okay. There you go. All right. Next game. Very interesting matchup, which we don't see very often. Florida Atlantic coming to Air Force. FS2, however, I shouldn't grow because last week's FS2 game was the game of the week, Air Force and Utah State. So maybe the hidden channel will get some eyeballs or get a surprise game. But you have the FAU Owls 2-1, Air Force 2-1, Falcons a 4.5-point favorite. So Florida Atlantic out of they're still in the Sun Belt, right?
They're in Conference USA.
Oh, they're in, okay, Conference USA. Apologies, I should have done that before. I thought they're in Sun Belt, but... So Florida Atlantic, 2-1 on the year, going up against Air Force, and they played recently. They played Florida reasonably close, but the last two games, Georgia Southern and FCS Fordham, they've won pretty easily. And so this is a team where, on conferences, as we mentioned, they don't travel as far. Sorry, I'm going to ask you a question because I'm a dummy. Does Georgia Southern still run the triple option?
They do.
It's at Georgia State.
But they aren't particularly good this year.
Okay, I know. I know it's Georgia State and Georgia Southern. I knew neither were amazing. So Georgia Southern runs a similar offense, or they attempt to run a similar offense. Mm-hmm. So that's something where that helps FAU out, because if you're playing a run option team, which you don't see very often, and you play in back-to-back weeks almost, it's pretty good. But when you look over, like, they have – I would say their best aspect is what – their passing game to LeJonte Wester, I'm guessing. Because they have no interceptions on the year. Nekoshi Perry doing quite well, over 63% of his passes. They have three receivers with over 10 catches. Multiple guys scoring touchdowns. It's not just like Wester, but like Brandon Robinson and John Mitchell each have a couple of touchdowns each plus others. So they spread the ball out pretty well, which I think this is going to clearly test this Falcons secondary and defense. The running game, it's okay, but it's not amazing with like, there's not like a huge top end runner that'll do extremely well things. They run it okay, but not good enough. This will be Falcons secondary needs to step up big in this game.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of hard to say, like, just how good Florida Atlantic is to this point, because, you know, they've taken care of business against teams that they probably should have. You know, like, Georgia Southern's not very good, neither is Fordham. But also, they were definitely overwhelmed against Florida in the season opener. And so, there's still a little bit of uncertainty, because, you know, just in terms of passer rating, which isn't always the most accurate metric, but, you know, Perry's passer rating in the Fordham game and the Florida game were almost exactly the same. So like it's definitely been a mistake free offense all the way around. But you know, for instance, in terms of net points per drive, you know offensive stinginess versus defensive stinginess. The only team that's closer to zero is Missouri. You know, Florida Atlantic is -0.07, in part because like their offensive production has been sort of to this point against FBS competition. You know, 1.82 yards points per drive is not bad, but it only ranks 77th nationally. They've actually been a little better on defense by that measure. So, you know, they have, I think, something to improve, but I would also say that, you know, Air Force's defense, especially after last week against Utah State, you know, they want to come out and prove that they're not going to get pushed around in a second straight week. Like, I think, you know, they're going to want to get after Perry, you know, a little more than we saw them able to do last week against Utah State. You know, they got a couple of licks on Logan Bonner, but they weren't able to really seal the deal as often as I think maybe you and I would have expected them to. So I think if they can put pressure on him with the front seven and sort of, you know, dictate the terms of the game on both sides of the ball, you know, get ahead and force them to rally. You know, you're looking at Florida Atlantic offensive line that's given up 10 sacks in three games already too. So while they've been, you know, turnover free, they also haven't always kept Perry on his feet either. And so I think that's something that Air Force is going to want to exploit.
You know, that makes a lot of sense. See, what has he been sacked, 11 times?
10 times.
Oh, 10, okay. So, yeah, and like you mentioned, linebacker for this group is deep because all the turnbacks, they're super experienced on this team. Like, it's hard to tell what Florida Atlantic really is because they can throw them pretty well. But I think with the amount of times he's been sacked and the lack of running game Florida Atlantic really has, because they're only 4 yards a carry, essentially 4.1, and the leading rusher, Malcolm Davidson, only has 165 yards and no touchdowns. So this is a team wants to pass, and Perry does pretty good when he's not getting sacked for 60 total minus sack yards. Mm-hmm. And then, like, Perry's not a guy who's going to run the ball either because of his 24 attempts, it's -2 yards. And remember, there's 60 sack yards in there. So it's not like he's the quarterback that's scrambling to run. He's scrambling to stay alive. And so, I don't know, this is a tough one. I want to say, here's why I think it'll happen, because Air Force, clearly, they run the ball, Brad Roberts, Zeke Daniels. They could do that pretty well and hold the ball. But also, remember, look what we saw last week for Utah State. How many downfield throws, because that's what we're figuring out. Who's going to be their downfield threat? Because they typically, every other year has some guy who goes downfield. Like, hey, he's going to have only 27 catches all year, but he has like 500 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Like, look what they did last week versus Aggies. Like, how many throws did they have, like, downfield? They had two receptions over 50 yards. When does that ever happen? He averaged 30. Zeke Daniels last week averaged 30 yards per completion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if that shows up again, there's no way Florida Atlantic can keep it close.
Yeah, I mean, I think the key for Air Force, you know, rather than trying to do something you don't often do, is just like see how good the Owls are up front, actually, because. You know, their season statistics are sort of skewed just based off of the competition that they've faced so far. You know, as a team, they're giving up, you know, 5.5 yards per carry in the first three games. But that is because they got absolutely blown out of the water by the Gators. And then, you know, put the clamps on it, like I said, a pretty bad Georgia Southern running game. And, you know, did so even more against Fordham. Like, Fordham had 18 carries for 29 yards. That's not Air Force's game plan. I think Air Force's game plan is to lean on Daniels and Roberts on the ground and see whether or not the Owls can stop them. You know, through three games, they've only got 16 tackles for loss, which is, you know, sort of an underwhelming havoc rate, you know, which is not to say that they don't have talent up front. You know, Jalen Joyner has a couple tackles for loss. He's an up-and-coming sophomore. Evan Anderson, freshman defensive lineman, has a couple tackles for loss. But, you know, how well are those guys going to hold up when they're getting pushed around in the trenches for 60 minutes? That's not something that they've really seen, at least relative from, like, you know, Georgia Southern to Air Force. I think Air Force is just a better team than Georgia Southern at this point.
All right, so what does FEI say in this game?
So FEI favors Air Force, although it does predict a fairly close game. They only favor the Falcons by 5.6 points.
So what's your score?
I think Air Force should be able to get it done. I just don't know that I'm totally sold on Florida Atlantic's defense being able to stop them over the course of 60 minutes. So while it's not going to get out of hand like it did against the Gators, I do expect the Falcons to win this one pretty comfortably. What did you say the spread was?
4.5.
4.5. I'm going to take the Falcons to win. I'm going to say 34-27.
Okay, lots of points. Over under 54.5. I do think there could be points, but I'm going a little bit lower than you. I think it's going to be 30-21 for Air Force. All right, Hawaii at New Mexico State. Hawaii's only 17-point favorite. It's a 6 p.m. local tip out there, or kick in Las Cruces. I don't seem to have this in front of me. Is this fun? It's on
flowfootball.com.
That's what I was about to say. Is it on Flow Sports?
Yes, it is.
Oh boy! So, what does that cost you?
Sure, somebody will rip it on YouTube or something, though.
Okay. So, I'm not
somebody, out, somebody out there, go be a hero. That's what we're saying.
Twitch, come on! Remember Twitch stream, do that. Does Flow TV have a free trial? Sort? I don't know.
That's all. So
we'll look at that later. Put that in the show notes or the game notes, I guess. But Aggies are—they do have a win, so they are better than. And they use better and loosely because they beat South Carolina State barely last week, 43-35.
Isn't South Carolina State terrible?
Yes, that's what I'm getting. They're very bad.
Okay.
They lost to UTEP 30-3. We've already talked about them enough, so all that else is there really to say. Aztecs won 28-10, New Mexico 34-25. Aggies are UConn bad, close to UConn bad, I guess. They're close. I guess the real quick rundown is the running game, they finally cracked 100 yards to one receiver running back in Juwan Price. But he's not very good. Like overall, the 3 yards of carry, they have a couple receivers, to be fair. Terrell Warner and Jared Wyatt both have over 10 catches, but they've also played 4 games. Quarterback play, they're about 50% overall when they're going back and forth between who they have. Too many interceptions, they've been sacked a lot. There's not much like on this Aggies offense.
So I think the big question about the Aggies is whether or not, you know, their new quarterback is going to be able to kind of keep up, you know, the improvement that he's brought to the passing game. Because, you know, last we checked in with them, like it wasn't necessarily the most efficient game against the Lobos a couple weeks ago. You know, Dino Maldonado was only 13 of 24, but he had 192 yards. So when he, you know, he had a couple of big plays. And, you know, last week against South Carolina State, you know, he was a little better than that. You know, he completed 75% of his passes, went over 300 yards, you know, averaged 10 yards an attempt and had 3 touchdowns. So, like you said, you know, they've at least shown that they can get their passing game on track. The challenge for Hawaii will be showing that last week's performance against San Jose State wasn't a fluke. You know, we talked about it a little bit with the Spartans earlier about how they've looked sort of uneven throughout the year for the most part. And, you know, to Hawaii's credit, you know, they've been pushed around a couple of times, but they found answers last week. And so, you know, if they can hold on to whatever pass rush they were able to generate, you know, that I think is going to be the one thing that, you know, New Mexico State hasn't really shown that they can hold up against a strong pass rush. If Hawaii can do that and get ahead early, then I don't think there's really any reason to suspect that, you know, Hawaii's offense won't be able to get on track either.
What do you want to see from Hawaii then? Because this is a game where they need to get everything properly and going correctly for them. Like, is Didi Hunter going to the ball well? Calvin Turner, Shavon Cordero. Like, this is a game where, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is where they play well. They should be able to beat them easily, as they should and will. But it's also like, all right, this is the game where they get right to figure things out going forward. Because they're sitting at 1-3. Their one victory is what, the FCS team they played?
Portland State.
Portland State. I forget who it was. But, like, Oregon State wasn't good. San Jose State, they were close, better. Not close for UCLA. So this is the game where they want to figure things out, because they got Fresno State coming up in a week after.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably what I see. Like, especially, I know the defense did a good job last week. I want to see them do it again. Because holding San Jose State to 17 points is a pretty good feat. So if they can hold New Mexico to, I don't know, whatever, but, like, under 2 touchdowns, I guess 17 or fewer points would be ideal against a team that doesn't score very many as their own, because they're expecting Hawaii to score a lot of points, but also I think the line and stuff is expecting the Aggies to get something, because it's 61.5, and if it's 17, that's like 40 to 23 or something, essentially. I don't see Mexico State scoring over 20 points, even for how bad Hawaii's defense has been. Like, if they get to 20, I'd be surprised.
So you want to know what I see?
What do you see?
I want to see a better overall offensive performance out of the Warriors, because when you look at their season numbers, you know, they're middle of the pack, they're okay, but a lot of that is obscured by what they did against Portland State. You know, when you look at what they've done in their 3 games against FBS competition so far, which, again, not the easiest slate in the world. It's UCLA, it's San Diego State, and San Jose State. So 3 tough defenses. But Shavon Cordero is averaging, what, 50% in those 3 games?
Something like that.
46.2 completion rate in those 3 games. 6.1 yards per attempt. You know, 3 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. Like, his passer rating is half of what it was against Portland State. You know, 102.55, which, again, not good. But, you know, that's not to say that he's been the only problem. Like, you know, the rushing offense is, you know, their overall performance is skewed because, you know, on the season, all 4 games, 3.7 yards per carry, which is not great. But against the 3 FBS teams, 2.77 yards per carry. So, like, the offense has to put it together, which, you know, you want to say it's a given because New Mexico State is not San Jose State, and they are not UCLA, and they're not, you know, San Diego State. But I don't know that you would call that necessarily a slam dunk. Like, you know, we've seen New Mexico State, you know, have signs of life on the offensive side of the ball. We've seen them create big plays. Hawaii's been in sort of that same boat, though. Like, we haven't really seen them create a ton of big plays against FBS defenses. So that's what I want to see from them in this game, is I want them to get the running game going with Dede Hunter and Dedrick Parson. I want them to protect Cordero so he's not constantly running for his life. And I want them to find a downfield passing game that doesn't look like it's going to be a train wreck every time Cordero throws it up.
No, you're not wrong. This is the game we want to see them figure things out. And they should.
Yeah, like case in point, right? I'm just going to throw this out there, and then maybe we can move on to predictions. On a, you know, net points per drive, New Mexico State's actually better through 3 games than Hawaii is. as a team. And so I think that that is something worth keeping in mind. Like, and on the offensive side of the ball, there really has not been much difference between them. You know, Hawaii per offensive possession, 1.16 points per game, or points per drive, excuse me. That's 107th nationally. Mexico State's at 114th. So Hawaii, especially on the offensive side of the ball, has plenty to prove. And, you know, we might have joked about this game being a walk before the preseason. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it necessarily is right now, because Hawaii has plenty to prove on the offensive side of the ball.
They do, but they're still going to win.
So what's the spread again?
It's 17.
So FEI favors the Warriors, but they only favor them by 6.9. And honestly, that sounds Ooh. About right.
Really?
Hawaii's got to show me something, wow. man. I mean, I'm going to pick them to win, but I don't think they'll cover.
Dude, they're winning 35-3.
No, I'm going to say 33-30.
Really?
They're going to have to earn this one.
Oh, man. Earn a game nobody can watch. Is that where we're sitting at?
Yeah. That actually tracks.
If you want a game and you struggle when it's close, put on Flow Sports. Sorry, Flow Sports. I actually did some work for Flow Sports like 2 years ago, so I apologize, but still.
The official network of college football sickos everywhere.
Exactly. All right, so final game weekend. New Mexico at UTEP, ESPN Plus. So, hey, guess what? Subscribe to ESPN Plus. You get two games this week.
There you go.
And they're spread apart. So, New Mexico at UTEP at the Sun Bowl, 6 p.m. or no, 7 p.m. local, because UTEP is Mountain Time. Would you pay $36 for this game? Because that's what the lowest ticket price is here.
It's a rivalry game, isn't it?
It's, yes, former WAC rivals. Yes, I remember. And when the University of Utah was really well, yes, when they were really good at basketball, and Rick Majerus was the head coach, when they had the UTEP New Mexico swing, like, all right, let's go 1-1 and hope we don't lose. Like, don't lose two, because going 2-0 is nearly impossible with those two teams when they're both mm-hmm. good. Former rival, former WAC teammates or conference mates. UTEP is 2-1. They are better than they used to be. I guess they're not. So I just keep saying UConn bad? Is that the best reference? They're not UConn bad?
I'll let you keep talking, then I'll give my take.
Well, I was going to just mention that they did get creamed by Boise State, and that's the only loss of the year. But they also crushed New Mexico State, which is, for them, good improvement in doing well. Mm-hmm. 30-3 in the opener.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, UTEP is not, like, they're not a world beater yet. By any stretch of the imagination. But I think, you know, what the Vegas line suggests is something that I agree with, is that this is a litmus test on both sides. You know, because I think when you look closely at the matchup, you see two pretty evenly matched teams. You know, both have quarterbacks who are playing, you know, pretty well, all things considered. You know, we know all about Terry Wilson and what he's been able to do. You know, Gavin Hardison for the Miners has completed 63% of his passes. You know, he's created a ton of big plays. He's actually at 10.4 yards per attempt. You know, maybe a few too many mistakes. You know, he's got 5 touchdowns against 4 interceptions. But, you know, this is an offense that has proven that it can move the ball a little bit, which is more than you could have said, you know, about these same Miners in year one of the Dana Dimel era. You know, they've got, you know, a quality running game that we talked about a little bit a couple weeks ago. You know, Ronald Watt and Willie Eldridge are both averaging over 5 yards per carry. So, I mean, they've got pieces. You know, they can be a balanced offense. And we haven't even mentioned Jacob Cowing. You know, 13 catches, 293 yards and 3 touchdowns. He's having a phenomenal start to his year. You know, he's a deep play threat who could hurt New Mexico if they're not careful. And, you know, we've seen over the last couple of weeks that both New Mexico State and Texas A&M were able to hit them deep down the field with broken coverages. And so UTEP is the kind of team that could very easily do the same kind of thing if New Mexico isn't prepared, isn't disciplined enough.
Yeah, you're true, because these teams are, well, New Mexico is doing better. They're still not going out, beating all these good teams. So this is going to be similar to that New Mexico State game. mm-hmm. where it's going to be close in scoring. It's going to be come down to the end. And, yeah, they played Texas A&M last week, but Terry Wilson out there is going to want to show up and prove what he can do in this game, throwing the ball at quarterback mm-hmm. to Lobo's receivers. But when you look at what UTEP can do, like, yeah, the Boise State game was tough. They scored just 14 points in that game, 13 points, 54-3. But other things of all this is going to be even more level playing field, duh, clearly. Neither mm-hmm. team's that good. I don't know. It's like Gavin Harrison's decent. They have basically, when you look at the pure numbers, or not in Mexico, excuse me, UTEP's like decent across the board, but they're not like great at anything. I guess their best thing would say Gavin Harrison completes 63%. That's pretty good. Jacob Cohen's really good too, 22 yards per catch. Like, they're going to have to stop that deep threat, and that's kind of what I think UTEP's going to need to do. Like, Ronald Awat does okay running the ball, a couple touchdowns, 207 yards. They're good. For who they play, their numbers are fine. And I expect the numbers they've been putting up to be very similar in this game that they have been versus New Mexico State and their FCS victory, too.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I think the one thing that's going to go a long way towards determining how this game unfolds is how well New Mexico runs the football. Because, as you might expect, they got shut down last week against A&M. But they've been pretty much okay running the ball at this point. They weren't necessarily like they haven't been terribly explosive, but between Aaron Dumas and Bobby Cole, they've been a functional running game at best. Through the early going, and I think they have the potential for more because we saw it down the stretch last year. And I think UTEP, especially up front, has playmakers of its own who could very easily put a lot of pressure on Terry Wilson to try to win the game by himself. Praise Amawule, sophomore defensive end who, it might sound strange, but he could be an NFL draft pick in a couple of years out of UTEP. Four tackles for loss. Keenan Stewart on that defensive line also has four tackles for loss. So they've got guys who can create they can create some havoc up front. I think that, the key is just finding a way around that, or, if Danny Gonzalez and Derek Wareham are set on trying to just establish the run, then, getting the upper hand with their interior alignment, I think, is going to be really key to this game. So I'm talking about, that the interior trio of Austin Cook, Kyle Stapley, Isaac Gutierrez. If they can get the upper hand against a pretty good interior that UTEP has, then I think the better off they'll be in the long run.
Yeah, because we've seen what Terry Wilson can do. And I think the next evolution of the offense is, like you said, if they can run the ball pretty well. And Bobby Cole's been getting there to be their guy. So what does FEI say for this particular matchup?
So FEI favors New Mexico, but they do see a pretty close game. They only favor the Lobos by 2 points.
This one has UTEP 1.5 at home. I don't know, man. This is a... What do you say? I don't know. I'm thinking.
I think it's going to be a pretty competitive game.
Yeah. One they should tune into. Yeah.
I just don't know that I think the big danger is UTEP's offense being able to create enough big plays to keep New Mexico's, offense at bay. But I'm also not entirely sold that other than that, the star players that the Miners have up front, that they're going to be able to contain New Mexico's offense consistently. So I think it's going to be competitive. I think it'll be close. I would expect the Lobos to cover barely. I'm going to say 35-31 New Mexico wins.
Okay, they can lose and cover if they lose by 1 point, just saying.
Yeah.
See, that's what I thought, barely cover. I'm like, oh, no, you're going to say 28-27 UTEP.
No, I mean, I think it'll be a hard – I mean, maybe it won't be the prettiest victory for New Mexico, but I think that they've got enough to be able to get the job done.
I think they do too, because I'm going to go 34-30 New Mexico. So a decent amount of points. Both teams will score, move the ball well. It'll be a game you want to turn into, because there's no, also it should be noted, there's no super late game this weekend. Like, this is the final game of the weekend, 7 Mountain Time, which is pretty rare in the Mountain West.
Mm-hmm.
Partly because of whatever certain teams are playing, but it'll be a good weekend. So check all those games out. MWR.com to find everything we write about, previews, recaps. Again, expansion stuff we're kind of always doing here and there to get people excited. So any final parts or parting shots for you? Or are we good to go?
I think we're good to go.
All right, folks. We'll see you next weekend to listen to the recap podcast, probably sometime Sunday. And we'll be back to, hey, we'll be enjoying the games like you this week, but check our previews and everything and our updates throughout the week for all the stuff we will have you covered. So we'll see you next time.